This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Wednesday, August 29th, 2018. Coming up this hour,
Canada joins NAFTA talks with less than 3 days to strike a deal.
The UK and EU drop the October deadline for a Brexit agreement.
The Turkish lira weakens yet again despite moves to tighten liquidity.
And new tweets from Elon Musk reignite concern about the Tesla chief executive.
It will be President Trump's Republican candidate against a Democratic candidate backed by Senator Bernie Sanders in the race for Florida's governor. I'm Michael Barr. More coming up.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Yankees beat the White Sox on a walk-off home run in the ninth inning. Mets and Cubs couldn't finish due to rain. Roger Federer a winner last night at the U.S. Open.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 991 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak, brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
Global stocks are struggling for direction, with investors awaiting the next developments on trade. It is 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Futures this morning, little changed. S&P futures up 1.5 points. Dow futures up 12. NASDAQ futures up 15. The DAX in Germany, little change. So is the CAC in Paris. FTSE 100 down 0.4%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.2%. So did the Hang Seng in Hong Kong. 10-year Treasury up 0.3 seconds. Yield 2.87%. Yield on the 2-year 2.65%. NYMEX crude oil up about 0.1% or 5 cents to $68.58 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.5% on $5.50 at $12.08.90 an ounce. The euro $1.1666. The yen 111.21. Bob.
Now that the U.S. and Mexico have struck a deal on trade, all eyes are on Canada. Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland arrived in Washington late yesterday for talks.
The fact that Mexico was able to do something that I think must have been quite difficult for Mexico and make those concessions does really set the stage for some productive conversations for us here this week.
And there's an emphasis on those words, this week. The U.S. says Friday is the deadline to reach an agreement.
Yesterday's talks between Freeland and U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer were brief. They met again this morning. Bloomberg senior editor Jody Schneider.
The real question is Canada going to get on board and be part of the deal? If it's a bilateral agreement with Mexico, that becomes problematic not only for businesses and analysts looking at this, but a lot of lawmakers in Washington who think they did not sign off on just a U.S.-Mexico agreement. They, you know, are making progress, but there's a few big stumbling blocks with Canada.
One of those stumbling blocks, restrictions on Canada's dairy market, but U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross tells us that's not all.
Canada has not been particularly good on intellectual property rights, on thwarting the transshipment of counterfeit goods through Canada to the U.S. A number of provisions of that sort are things that we need from them.
President Trump has threatened to apply tariffs to Canadian auto exports if no deal is reached.
We have new developments on Brexit this morning, with the UK and EU said to be dropping the October deadline for a deal. Bloomberg's Sebastian Salek joins us live from London with details. Good morning, Sebastian.
Good morning, Bob and Karen. Bloomberg sources now saying that both sides aim to finalise divorce terms by the middle of November at the latest. That's despite maintaining in public that they want a Brexit deal wrapped up in the next 7 weeks. The EU summit beginning October the 18th had been earmarked as the deadline, and that was already pushed back from earlier hopes of resolving the divorce by last June. Now, the longer the time frame is another indication that negotiators are struggling to make headway, and the risk is that the closer the talks run to the exit on March the 29th, the greater the chance that there won't be a deal. Live in London, I'm Sebastian Salek, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Sebastian. In Turkey, the central bank is reintroducing limits on interbank borrowing. The move effectively tightens liquidity in an effort to contain the Turkish lira's plunge. Still, Bloomberg emerging markets reporter Alexander Nicholson says more action is needed.
What do investors want to see? You know, their wish list is pretty straightforward. It's what it has always been. They want to see policy steps, monetary policy steps, fiscal policy steps aimed at tackling this crisis. So far, we're not seeing that.
The Turkish lira is weakening for a third day. Right now, it is at 6.3806.
And the Senate has confirmed Richard Clarida to be vice chairman of the Federal Reserve. The Columbia University professor and PIMCO global strategic advisor was confirmed by a vote of 69 to 26. Clarida has voiced support for raising rates and vowed to ignore political pressure when deciding policy.
Here in the U.S., the government issues revised data on first quarter GDP at 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Economists forecast growth of 4%. Bloomberg's Vinnie Dalgiudice has more.
The data are looking pretty good. In its initial estimate, the government reported GDP expanded at a 4.1% annual rate in the first quarter, the strongest since 2014. Bloomberg Economics says today's report will include the government's initial tally of first quarter corporate profits. Also on the economic calendar, data on pending home sales and mortgage applications. Vinnie Dalgiudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Vinnie. On the corporate news front, new tweets from Elon Musk are rekindling concern about the Tesla CEO. Bloomberg's John Tucker is here live with the latest. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob. Just days after abandoning a hastily planned idea to take Tesla private, Elon Musk returned to Twitter. He denied crying during a New York Times interview earlier this month. He also lashed out at a follower who criticized him for calling a cave explorer in Thailand a pedophile back in July. His earlier posts about Tesla are said to be under investigation by the SEC, and Ben Callow, research analyst at Robert W. Baird, was asked about Musk's management.
I think he's close to his ninth life right now.
The latest tweets reinforce concerns about whether Musk can adhere to the SEC's rules now that he's decided Tesla will stay public and continue to fall under the agency's oversight. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thank you very much. Italy reportedly may reach out to the European Central Bank for a new round of government bond purchases. An Italian newspaper says the government is considering asking the ECB for a QE-style program to shield its public debt from financial speculation. Yields on Italian bonds have climbed since a new populist government came to power. S&P futures at this hour up 2 points. That is not quite a tenth of 1%. The 10-year yield at 2.8713%. Stay tuned for the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg. And that brings us to 5:07 on Wall Street. The latest on election returns now from Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. A liberal Florida Democrat, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, pulled off an upset victory in the state's primary for governor. Gillum, endorsed by Senator Bernie Sanders, addressed his supporters last night.
This is not my moment. This is our moment. This is our moment.
Gillum beat fellow Democrat Gwen Graham 34.3% to 31.3%. President Trump's favorite candidate, Congressman Ron DeSantis, won easily for the GOP.
It's a great, unique state, and I think that as the next governor, I want to keep it a great state. I want to build.
In Arizona, Congresswoman Martha McSally won the Republican Senate primary to fill the seat vacated by retiring Senator Jeff Flake. McSally drew 52.2% to Kelly Ward at 28.3% and Joe Arpaio at 19.5%. McSally faces Democratic Congresswoman Kyrsten Sinema. Mourners will gather at the Arizona State Capitol to pay their respects to late Senator John McCain. A private ceremony will be held this morning at the Capitol Rotunda. A split may be forming within the Republican Party when it comes to President Trump's beleaguered attorney general. Bloomberg's Nathan Hager explains.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's handing Jeff Sessions a bit of a lifeline.
I have total confidence in the Attorney General. I think he ought to stay exactly where he is.
That's in contrast to other Senate Republicans like Lindsey Graham and Chuck Grassley, who've signaled President Trump could replace Sessions after the midterm elections. Trump has long subjected his man at the Justice Department to open ridicule for recusing himself from the Russian election meddling probe. A successor to Sessions could rein in that investigation, now led by Special Counsel Robert Mueller. In Washington, I'm Nathan Hager, Bloomberg Radio.
The U.S. is sending a warning to North Korea following President Trump's decision to cancel Secretary of State Pompeo's trip to Pyongyang. Bloomberg's Peter Pays in Seoul.
Defense Secretary Jim Mattis told reporters at the Pentagon that the U.S. has no plans to suspend joint military drills with South Korea, remarks that are likely to renew tensions on the Korean Peninsula. The comments came in the wake of reports that North Korea was rejecting American demands for Kim Jong-un to give up his nuclear warheads. Annual military drills, which North Korea sees as a prelude to war, were suspended as the U.S. and North Korea began talks on denuclearizing the region. In Seoul, Peter Pei, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Michael, thanks very much. Now 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. And good morning to you, John Stashower.
Good morning, Bob. The Yankees were getting booed a night after losing to the lowly White Sox by 4 runs. They trailed them again by 4. But a night after getting just 3 hits, this time they woke up and hit 3 big home runs. Miguel Andujar, 2-run shot, 6th inning. That got them on the board. Aaron Hicks went yard with a man on in the 8th. That tied the game. And in the bottom of the 9th, Neil Walker came up as a pinch hitter.
Here is Walker, and the pitch is hit in the air. To deep right, it is high. It is far. It is gone. On one pitch, Neil Walker, the home run corker. A walk-off, one out, 9th inning, home run. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
That's, of course, John Sterling, WFAN. 5-4 the final. The Yankees stay 6.5 games behind the Red Sox. They rallied themselves, beat Miami 8-7. At Wrigley, it was as advertised, a pitcher's duel between Jacob DeGrom and the Cubs' Cole Hamels. DeGrom was usual, brilliant, but little run support. In fact, he drove in the Mets' only run. The game was 1-1 in the 10th inning when the rain came. They'll finish it this afternoon ahead of the regularly scheduled game. Day 2 of the U.S. Open, only real upset, Coco Vandeweghe went down. Women's winners included Angelique Kerber, Maria Sharapova, on the men's side, Roger Federer, and Novak Djokovic. We're at the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stashower. Bob.
John, thank you. So how much food does it take to feed a football team at training camp? According to the Washington Post, during 1 week this summer, about 90 Redskins ate 875 pounds of fish, 420 pounds of chicken, 110 pounds of pasta, 54 dozen eggs, and 50 watermelons. On average, a player consumed about 4,000 calories per day. The paper says in 2007, only one NFL team, the Patriots, had a full-time sports dietitian. Now 20 NFL teams do. S&P futures up 2 points. This is Bloomberg. Daybreak, brought to you by National Realty, developers of Prime New York, Hoboken, Philadelphia, and Delray Beach Real Estate. Up to 20% return properties. See them at NRIA.net.
Bloomberg. Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks and U.S. stock index futures are little changed this morning after a lackluster Asian session. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 2 points this morning. Dow futures up 19. NASDAQ futures up 18. The DAX in Germany, little changed. 10-year Treasury up 2/32, yield 2.87%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.65%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.2% or 15 cents to $68.69 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.3% on $4 to $12.10.40 an ounce. The euro, $1.1673, the yen, 111.21. Today we're watching for a report on second quarter gross domestic product at 8:30 Wall Street time. Attendance pending home sales. And Salesforce.com and Dick's Sporting Goods among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Karen. In Florida, a liberal Democrat, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, pulled off an upset victory in the state's primary for governor. He'll face President Donald Trump's favored candidate, Congressman Ron DeSantis. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell offered beleaguered Attorney General Jeff Sessions his full endorsement. It comes as some Republicans have signaled President Trump may replace him after the midterm elections. In baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets-Cubs game was suspended in the 10th inning because of rain. It will resume later today. The Red Sox won along with the Nationals, Orioles, Giants, and A's. In tennis at the U.S. Open, Roger Federer advanced today and tonight. Sloane Stephens and the Williams sisters play their matches. For the men, Andy Murray and Rafael Nadal face their opponents. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Michael, thanks very much. It is now 5:19 on Wall Street, and we're joined by Stephen Chork, president of the Chork Group. Good morning and welcome, Stephen. We get the EIA crude oil inventory report today, and what are you expecting?
Right now, I'm expecting more of the same, Bob. Over the last 2 weeks, we've seen two very constructive reports. That is to say that crude oil prices have begun to stabilize. And we've not been seeing now since actually over the summer, the start of the summer, very nice builds in the diesel fuel market, which was a huge concern given that we had a huge deficit, year-on-year deficit back in May. That deficit has been halved over the last 12, 13 weeks. Interestingly enough, gasoline supplies are also plentiful. And this is interesting because over the next couple of weeks, these supplies will have to be flushed out of tank because they are lower RVP, that is to say summer grade gasoline, and those inventories have to be exercised to make room for the winter grade supplies that we're going to start to burn in our cars come September, October, and into November.
Is there still that wild card out there about concern about disruptions of Iranian exports because of the U.S. sanctions?
Yeah, absolutely. Markets right now, from a fundamental near-term basis, we're in a quote-unquote bearish time of the season. The gasoline driving season is going to end in a week after the Labor Day holiday, and then we go into the fall maintenance season for refineries, so they burn fewer barrels. So this is a weak demand part of the year. So the market certainly is being kept afloat on geopolitical headlines. Most of those headlines, Bob, are old, right? We've known since May that the Iranian sanctions are coming into place. So if we know that headline, then theoretically that concern is already priced into the market. And the same situation in Venezuela. But certainly it is a volatile topic, and it is lending support to this market.
Now, you say oil prices are stabilizing. I wonder, though, how tightly wound are oil prices when you have things like pipeline bottlenecks and President Trump's efforts to lower fuel costs sort of buffeting the market?
Right. And so we have an extremely potential for volatility. For instance, to your point, the United States come in October will release 11 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve the month of right before these Iranian sanctions are going to go into effect. Where you're really seeing the volatility, Bob, is in geographic areas. So to your point about bottlenecks, there certainly is a bottleneck, not enough pipelines to get all the oil we are producing in West Texas to get it to its two main outlet markets. The Oklahoma market, where you take delivery on the NYMEX contract, and the Houston market, which is becoming a major export hub. So we're seeing that also in the Brent market, and the Brent market traded in London is more of a reflection of the global picture, hence the geopolitics. And over the last month, we've seen the structure of the market turn from a contango, that is to say the market for delivery in November below that of later months has moved into backwardation. And so now the November contract, the nearby contracts trading at a premium. And anytime you see a move like that, a move from contango to backwardation, your first takeaway is that concern for that commodity in that delivery month is beginning to grow. And certainly, given that these sanctions go into effect in November, one potential takeaway here is that the market is starting to grow concerned with these Iranian sanctions.
So what does that mean to Brent's premium over New York prices?
Essentially, I would suspect that premium to continue to grow, given you have the geopolitics. The Brent market is absolutely more vulnerable to headlines. And here in the U.S., with those backlogs, we have all of this oil, but certainly difficulty getting it into the market. So that will tend to depress price relative to Brent. So this move to backwardation, I could see having some legs into it.
Long term, does the chance of an oil price rise grow?
No, everything's an unknown right now with how these Iranian sanctions play out, but certainly there is that concern. But at the same time, we're also looking at a market that's very different, that demand elasticity functions are no longer what they used to be. If, for instance, there's just a report out now that EV sales, electric hybrid sales in Europe, year on year are up 40%. So clearly, the inroads made by substitutes, people now have the option to greatly reduce their oil consumption or go all electric and completely eliminate their oil consumption. So that is certainly an overhang for prices. So I do expect to see prices, hence any geopolitical markets, stabilize in that $75 to $65 range.
Stephen Shark, president of the Shark Group, thanks very much for your oil insights this morning. Let's check oil right now. West Texas Intermediate crude is up a third of 1% at $68.77 a barrel. Brent crude higher by a quarter percent to $76.15. S&P futures up 3 points, a tenth of 1%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg Radio. Daybreak brought to you by Willoughby's since 1898, New York City's boutique camera store for precision-crafted Hasselblad and Leica cameras, plus a full selection of GoPro action-adventure cameras. Willoughby's, corner of 5th Avenue and 35th Street.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1, to Boston, Bloomberg 1061, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It is 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Bob Moon. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are rising following another record close for both the S&P 500 and NASDAQ, and ahead of a key economic report before the opening bell.
At 8:30 a.m. Wall Street time, the government issues revised data on first quarter economic growth. Economists say the report will probably show a 4% gain, little change from the initial reading.
Richard Clarida has won Senate confirmation to be the vice chairman of the Federal Reserve. During his confirmation hearing in May, Clarida voiced support for Fed Chairman Jerome Powell's drive to raise rates.
Canada's foreign minister has now joined trade talks in Washington, and she's facing a Friday deadline imposed by the U.S. If the treaty is to include three nations, Chrystia Freeland says she's encouraged by progress made by the U.S. and Mexico.
The U.K. and the European Union are privately backing off their October deadline for a Brexit deal. Bloomberg News has learned they now hope to finalize terms of the divorce by the middle of November at the latest.
On the earnings front, Salesforce.com will post its second quarter results after the markets close today. We get a preview from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
Bloomberg Intelligence says software spending and new markets boosted demand for cloud computing services, and Salesforce.com should continue to see double-digit growth, as was the case with SAP and Microsoft. Investors will be very interested in the company's ability to grow its pipeline, and they'll want an update on Salesforce's efforts to increase its international presence after last year's heavy investments. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Jeff. Shares of Hewlett-Packard Enterprise are up 0.5%. The company's profit forecast topped analyst estimates, signaling that it's starting to benefit from cost cuts and a push into higher-margin businesses.
And in London, Aston Martin is making plans for its long-awaited IPO. The British sports car maker is said to target a valuation as high as $6.4 billion. Futures this morning are higher. S&P futures up 2 points. Dow futures up 13. NASDAQ futures up 17. The DAX in Germany is little change. So is the CAC in Paris. FTSE 100 is down 0.5%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32. The yield 2.87%. Yield on the 2-year 2.65%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.33%, up 22 cents. It's at $68.74 a barrel. Brent is up 0.25%, or 18 cents, to $76.13. COMEX gold down about 0.33%, down $4.10. It's at $1,210.20 an ounce. The euro this morning, $1.1666. The yen at 111.22. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It is now 5:33 on Wall Street. The latest primary election result trends from Bloomberg's Michael Barr. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. In Florida, a liberal Democrat pulled off an upset victory in the state's primary for governor. Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum will face President Donald Trump's favorite candidate, Congressman Ron DeSantis, who cruised victory for the Republicans. Congresswoman Martha McSally celebrated her victory in Arizona's GOP Senate primary to fill Jeff Flake's seat. McSally remembered late Senator John McCain.
Senator McCain was an American hero. He paid an unfathomable price for our freedom, and upon returning home, continued to serve with conviction, honor, and sacrifice his whole life.
McSally will face Democrat Kyrsten Sinema in November. The body of Senator John McCain will lie in state beginning today in Arizona after his death last weekend. Today would have been McCain's 82nd birthday. President Donald Trump's one-time campaign chairman already faces another trial next month on money laundering and obstruction of justice charges. By the end of the day, Paul Manafort, will learn whether he'll face still another date in court. This after his jury in Alexandria, Virginia, failed to return verdicts last week on 10 of the 18 counts against him. Federal prosecutors must now declare whether they intend to retry Manafort on those charges. With or without Canada, the Trump administration says it intends to revamp NAFTA, hopefully by the end of the week. The story from Bloomberg's Martin DeCaro.
With Canada's foreign minister in D.C. for trade talks, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross tells Bloomberg dairy tariffs are one sticking point among several.
Canada has not been particularly good on intellectual property rights.
The administration wants a deal by Friday, but it'll be the next Congress that approves any final revisions, Maryland Democratic Senator Ben Cardin.
There's still a lot of questions out there,
including a U.S. demand for a sunset clause to kill NAFTA after 5 years unless the countries agree to renew. In Washington, Martin DeCaro, Bloomberg Radio.
In Puerto Rico, Governor Ricardo Rossello raised the official death toll from Hurricane Maria from 64 to 2,975 following a new George Washington University study. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Thank you, Michael. Now 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Good morning to you, John Steshauer.
Morning, Bob. The Yankees were looking at a second straight home loss to the lowly White Sox, down 4-0 in the sixth inning. But Miguel Andujar and Aaron Hicks both belted two-run homers for both. It was their 22nd of the season. And then with one out in the bottom of the ninth, Neil Walker pinch hitting for Ronald Torres. First pitch he saw from Dylan Covey. Long home run to right field. The Yanks won 5-4. Walker started the season slowly, has come on strong, playing four different positions for manager Aaron Boone.
There was a stretch there where, you know, he was, you know, really, really on fire when we really needed him to, and has gotten a lot of big hits for us, not only through that stretch, but really all year. You know, he's come up with some big hits, and, you know, I felt like so bad we kind of needed to get him a day, and, you know, goes up there one pitch and ends it.
Red Sox also won bottom of the ninth on a Marlins error. Boston stayed 6.5 games ahead. At Wrigley Field, the typical Jacob DeGrom outing. 8 innings, allowed just one run, struck out 10, lowered his ERA to 1.68, which is much lower than anyone else in the league. But in 27 starts, he's only won 8 times because the Mets don't score runs for DeGrom. In fact, he drove in their only run. Mets and Cubs were 1-1, 10th inning. They couldn't finish due to rain. They'll finish this afternoon. The Giants scored 9th inning, topped Arizona 1-0, second straight shutout win. The A's won 4-3 at Houston. They trailed the AL West by a game and a half. No big surprises at the U.S. Open. Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic won their opening round matches. So did Madison Keys, Caroline Wozniacki. Day three has Rafael Nadal and Serena Williams both playing again under the lights. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Bob?
Thank you, John. Now 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now, with the cover story on Harley-Davidson's plans to survive aging customers and President Trump's trade war. Also in this week's issue, Air France faces some perfectly French problems. Matthew Campbell wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
Within Air France, there is some grumbling, and occasionally more than grumbling, that the balance of power within what was supposed to be a binational but French-led company is in fact shifting to Amsterdam, and that does not have some Air France staff and particularly some Air France unions very happy.
Read more about it in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now to access insights and analysis on the global stories that matter most. Now 5:38 on Wall Street. Time for your Tri-State Business Report, and good morning to you, Ed Gorey.
Hi, Bob. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy has killed a proposed 5-cent tax on plastic and paper bags, arguing it doesn't go far enough and sending lawmakers back to the drawing board. This bill, approved by the state legislature in June, would have placed a 5-cent fee on single-use bags handed out at large retailers and chain stores. There will be no legislative action on the issue of sports betting in Connecticut till next year, under a new governor. That's a big turnaround from 9 months ago, when lawmakers said they were far ahead of other states in laying groundwork to prepare for sports betting. Long Island is so hot and muggy, that residents blasting air conditioners have sent wholesale power prices to a two-year high. The heat index, a combination of temperature and humidity, hit 107 degrees Tuesday afternoon in Farmingdale, according to the Weather Channel. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Bob?
Thank you, Ed. Now 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm reporting on efforts by Altice to stop the Sprint T-Mobile merger.
I'm Joan Doniger telling WBBM listeners in Chicago why Sears shares jumped almost 13%.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, we're keeping an eye on generic pharmaceutical products maker Lannett Company after it posted a quarterly loss.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on how UK shop prices rose for the first time in over 5 years. August.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Yum China is said to have rejected a buyout offer from an investor group led by Hill House Capital.
I'm Ed Corey on KFBK in Sacramento. I'm reporting Amazon has had talks with Sony and Paramount about co-financing movies.
Thank you all. Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. The test scores are in, and the number of candidates who passed the third and final level of the Chartered Financial Analyst exam in June rose to the highest level in 12 years, 56%. Candidates study an average of 300 hours for each CFA exam. It typically takes 4 years to complete the series. S&P futures virtually unchanged at this hour. Dow futures up 2 points. NASDAQ futures up 13 points. And the 10-year yield at 2.8695%. This is Bloomberg. It's news 24/7, streaming live on Twitter. Check out at TikTok by Bloomberg. You can follow us at TikTok. That's TICTOC.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. stocks, U.S. equity stock futures, meanwhile, are little changed this morning after a lackluster Asian session, with investors largely treading water as they await the next developments on trade. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, they're up less than a point. Dow futures up 4. NASDAQ futures up 14. The DAX in Germany is down about 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 2.86%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.65%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.3% or 20 cents to $68.73 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.33% on $4.30 to $12.10.10 an ounce. The euro, $1.1667. The yen, 111.21. Today we're watching for a report on second quarter gross domestic product at 8:30 Wall Street time. At 10, it's pending home sales and Salesforce.com. And Dick's Sporting Goods are among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, a private ceremony will be held this morning at the Arizona State Capitol to honor Senator John McCain. Later this afternoon, the Capitol will be open to the public as McCain lies in state. Google says we never rank search results to manipulate political sentiment. The push comes back after President Trump accused Google and other U.S. tech companies of rigging search results about him so that almost all stories and news is bad. In baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets-Cubs game was suspended in the 10th inning because of rain. It will resume later today. The Red Sox won along with the Nationals, Orioles, Giants, and A's. In tennis at the U.S. Open, Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic advanced. Today and tonight, Sloan Stephens and the Williams sisters will play their matches for the men. Andy Murray and Rafael Nadal face their opponents. Global news 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Bob.
Thank you, Michael. Now 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. We're joined live now by Jennifer Ryan, Bloomberg Opinion editor in our London bureau. Jen, good morning and welcome. Christopher Balding is of the opinion that a U.S.-Mexico trade pact could turn the tables on China.
Yeah, he says that the greatest impact of this new pact
could be felt there, because if he goes through all the various components and it says this all sort of funnels down to one conclusion, that it's got China in mind. So let's take one of the key ones that have gotten a lot of press, the tighter rules of origin on automobiles. So you've got to have at least 40% of their content must be made by domestic companies whose workers earn at least $16 an hour. This limits the scope for assembly in Mexico with Chinese components. And so just taking that alone, it does look like if the whole draft agreement has China partly in mind.
And there are some aspects of the deal that may target China more directly.
That's right. So the section on intellectual property addresses a long-standing issue with Beijing, but there's more to it than that. So if you look at digital services, the draft limits a government's ability to require disclosure of proprietary computer source code and algorithms, and that's something China has mandated for most IT providers. I mean, if you doubt this way of looking at the pact, consider the environmental section. There's a ban on shark finning by Mexico and the U.S., which is the practice of cutting the fins off of sharks and leaving them to die. China is, of course, a major consumer of shark fins.
So I guess the question becomes, what is the end game here?
Well, of the greatest potential importance, the Mexico deal could put the U.S. on a path to assembling a coalition against China. Of course, Trump has angered his allies at every turn, and during that, Beijing felt little real threat and could present itself as a new global leader in free trade. But if the administration can now actually create a bloc with Canada, that would not only alter the dynamic of the U.S.-China trade dispute, it could pave the way for similar agreements with Europe. So the end result might be an updated common understanding of free trade that would isolate China.
And what's eating China's stock market? Shuli Ren says everything. How have Chinese stocks been doing?
It has not been great. China's stock market is Asia's worst, and you've got the benchmark Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 has been underperforming the S&P 500 by close to 30 percentage points this year.
Why did it get this way?
Well, there's two phases to it. The bear market started off at the start of the year with investors selling out of fear that they'd be caught in Beijing's intensified deleveraging campaign. I mean, the issue there is that shareholders actually don't have a lot of rights when a company defaults on its borrowings. The issue now is fragile Chinese earnings. So profit margins for Chinese companies really narrowed in July, and companies are feeling the pinch from a variety of headwinds. I mean, you can kind of take your pick here. You've got soaring raw material costs, higher rents, really big social contributions that entrepreneurs need to contribute.
So is there anything that Beijing's government can do to rescue the stock market?
Well, an obvious route would be to double down on infrastructure, but that's just going to add more debt onto already financially distressed companies. So Ren suggests that Beijing should just take a page from President Donald Trump's playbook and just cut corporate taxes, because she points out that the handout managed to supercharge and protect, however temporarily, the U.S. economy from the fallout from the trade war. And China could certainly do with a lower burden. Counting social safety net contributions, the effective corporate tax rate in China is 67.3%, the 12th highest among 190 economies surveyed by the World Bank. So unfortunately, though, Beijing's kind of in a state of policy paralysis. So until early next year, we might not see anything other than a bear territory for China's stock market.
Jennifer Ryan in London, thank you. You can read more on this and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or on the terminal at OPIN Go. Karen.
All right, thank you, Bob. It is 5:52 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington newsroom.
Nevada's first year of recreational marijuana sales exceeded the state's expectations, raking in about $70 million in tax revenue when combined with medical sales. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services will extend its temporary suspension of premium processing for H-1B visas until February. Premium processing allows employers to pay an extra fee for their petitions to be processed within 15 days. And encouraging utilities to meet drinking water standards will become part of an EPA national drive to foster compliance without the threat of enforcement action.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Now, in other legal news, let's look at a U.S. judge decision extending a ban on publishing blueprints for 3D printed guns online. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks with Barry McDonald, a professor at Pepperdine University Law School.
Barry, the Trump administration reversed the position of the Obama administration. Why is the federal government fighting in court to allow the distribution of 3D printed gun files?
Well, I think there
sort of back on their heels. They're not so much fighting to allow it to happen, but they're justifying a settlement agreement that they entered into with this defense distributed company to allow them to do that. And, you know, they put forth a couple of different rationales for that. Originally, in a memo by the State Department, they said that we don't think the First Amendment would allow us to keep them from making these digital blueprints or these software files available on the Internet. And then in court, they're really justifying it on the grounds that, look, we did a long study, and we've concluded that allowing these blueprints to be distributed won't threaten our national security interests.
The judge issued a strongly worded decision. Tell us what he said.
Well, the judge basically said that the Trump administration didn't follow proper procedures when it removed this particular item from the export restriction. So the law at issue here is a ban on making available information to foreigners that might, you know, allow them to create weapons and munitions that could be used against the United States. And so the judge said that when the Trump administration agreed to remove these particular items from the sort of category it might have fallen into on the export list, that they didn't, you know, properly give Congress 30 days prior day notice of doing that, and they didn't notify the Defense Department. So it's really just you didn't do it the right way. Go back and, you know, restart the 30-day clock, do it the right way, and then we'll see. Then we'll litigate the case perhaps on other grounds.
That's Pepperdine University Law School Professor Barry McDonald speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. Bob.
It is now 5:56 on Wall Street. Time for your Bloomberg ETF report with Bloomberg's Julie Hyman.
It seems like there are an almost overwhelming number of ETFs, and yet they still keep coming. Tom Sarvegas of Bloomberg Intelligence is here. What have we seen in terms of ETF launches this year?
Yeah, so it seems like the issuers are really just shrugging off all the critics at saying there's too many ETFs. So this year, we've seen about 167 new products come to the market through August. To put that into perspective, that's the fourth best historically. So the products keep on coming. One area that's really unique is that we're seeing a really big uptick in commodity-related products.
I mean, when you see this number of issuers come out with new ETFs, are we seeing also a lot of turnover? In other words, do a lot of ETFs also shut down?
So overall, net launches are slightly going down, right? Because the market, as it gets more mature, it's much more competitive. So right, launches are just half the story, but we're also seeing record closures here, so too. So on a net basis, launches are pretty much flat.
Gotcha. So survival of the fittest when it comes to ETFs. Thanks, Tom. With the Bloomberg ETF Report, I'm Julie Hyman.
Thank you, Julie. S&P futures at this hour up a single point. And your 10-year Treasury yield at 2.8695%. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.